Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
How's it going, Mr. Ben Errington?
It's all right, Mr. Condor, and the devil are you?
Not too bad. Got some tea. My beard's growing back
a
little
bit. Yeah, that's good. Mine's growing back a little bit as well. I shaved it to within an inch of its life.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've got some H2O. Delicious.
Delicious H2O. Yeah, man. So this is going to be a bit of a different episode. This I'm not going to be talking about any specific episode this time. We're coming on to the final 10, and I figured it might be nice to have a quick look back and just have a little chin wag before we dive into the
Nostalgic look back.
Yeah.
50 episodes. Well, yeah. 51 now, but 50 episodes of horror movie goodness. Yeah. Did you think maybe we would have got bored at some point? Maybe like 20 in, we'd have been like, nah, this ain't for me.
You can't really stop at that point. Like,
we've persevered.
Yeah. No, there's been like a couple of weeks where like you might be tired from other stuff. And it's like, this is like the other thing to do. I've got to watch a movie that maybe you're not even looking forward to that much. Like some of them, like I don't know, like you know when you've got a big stack of things to watch, and then like sometimes the horror hangout one just isn't calling out to you, but the like something else, something brand new is or something.
I know what you mean. Sometimes it's a bit of a slog. Yeah. To watch it. There have definitely been a handful of films which have been a bit of a slog that I've watched in like more than one. Two sittings.
Yeah. What's the most amount of sittings you've seen one of these films in?
Oh God. I don't know if I could say, but probably like three or four, I reckon.
Wow. Four, that's
four. I don't remember what that might have been, one of the older ones.
Yeah.
I think I just watched like a bit and then watched a bit another day and then carried on like that. I can't remember exactly what one it was, but
I'll tell you the place where I've kind of realized one of my favourite ways to watch films now, and this is going to sound ludicrous to like people who are like, it's got to be on the big screen or nothing. And when I'm on the bus or the tram, I get the film up on my laptop, put my headphones in, and watch it that way with it in my lap. And it's like nearly pressed into my face. But there's something really engrossing about watching something that way.
Because when you watch it on public transport, other people do look as well.
Yeah.
If you're watching something particularly gruesome, or you know, there's a little bit of a sexual bit in it.
Yeah,
you can feel eyes on you, and you're like,
"There's a." So I remember I was watching Psycho, a bit of Psycho like that, and I remember people looking over, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm the kind of person who watches black and white movies."
That's right, I watch a black and white movie on the tram. You're gonna judge me, are you? Well, screw you.
Go back to your RuPaul's Drag Race. Although I can't really say that because I watch RuPaul's Drag Race all the time.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you just look like a crazy kook.
Yeah, but like something about watching something in that way. Maybe it's because it's super difficult to get the phone out as well, and it's just like, just you know, focus on the film.
Yeah, so I don't, when you're like in a tight fit, like on a megabus or something,
yeah,
and you got your laptop on your lap, and the screen's kind of like almost folded to like leaning toward you a little bit, so yeah. You're kind of a bit like you got a hunch over as well, so you can see everything.
And when the person in front of you pulls the chair back, they press the button, and they go,
"Oh my god,
break my fucking screen!"
Screen's just absolutely split in half.
Yeah.
I was watching the last film I watched on a megabus or on any public transport was Predator 2. And I remember feeling eyes on me, and I turned around, and there was like an older woman.
Alien.
It was an alien. It was an older woman.
Yeah.
And she was watching it like with absolutely no. Do you know sometimes if you look at someone's screen and they look at you, you kind of look away, and go shit, sorry.
Sorry, yeah. I do that with people's books. Like I always want to see what they're reading.
Yeah.
And then if they ever catch me, I go.
Oh, what's that up on the ceiling?
Just like casually pointing.
Oh no, it's gone.
Yeah.
But she didn't care. She just carried on watching it. She didn't flinch.
If she started mouthing the lines
with
the film, that would have been funny.
It turned out she just absolutely loved Danny Glover.
Yeah, who doesn't they?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. That's, for a long time, I preferred Predator 2 to Predator 1. I think that's the one I had on video, so that's what I rewatched over and over and over again. And I liked, you know, the last bit where... There's loads of things I like the bit where the Predator gets his... He like cuts his arm or something. I can't remember. He gets the little crystal goop. Yeah. That bit's amazing. Yeah. And I like the ship at the end. And it's got all the schools, and it's like, wow.
Yeah. Wow, expanded universe, man.
My 10-year-old imagination is exploding. Yeah. But before we get into the look back, have you done any other guffs and stuff?
The look back. Hey, you're just looking back at all the nostalgic. I haven't done any horror guffs this week. I know this is becoming a really. Really,
but you watched Tremors.
Repetitive. Yeah, I did. You know my life better than me.
Yeah.
I did watch Tremors, yep. We've been with a couple of friends, we've been doing like a weekly movie night where we watch like a film from like usually the 90s or our childhood and introduce it to the other two. So far we've done like Training Day, Point Break, Hollow Man.
Oh yeah, another Kevin Bacon classic.
Yeah, so we got discussing Kevin Bacon, and we were like, you know, let's watch Tremors. And you know, Tremors is pretty great. I think I've only ever seen the first one. I think there's five now.
Yeah, I don't think you really need... Oh, they're making a TV show. I think Kevin Bacon's company is producing it, I believe. Yeah. Yeah, they're making a TV show. And I think Kevin Bacon's going to be in it.
Is he?
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
Tremors is like, when you think of like creature feature B-movies... Like, I don't know, it's up there for me. Like, I really enjoy watching it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Tremors is great. I'd like to see the others just to see what other ridiculous stuff they do with it. Kevin's middle name is Norwood. Norwood Bacon.
I thought it was Canadian.
You thought it was Canadian?
Kevin Canadian Bacon.
Kevin Canadian Bacon. Everyone loves a bit of Canadian bacon. Delicious.
Maple. Mr. Maple Bacon. Mapley.
Yum, yum, yum.
I watched a film called Cold Hell. Which so Shudder, with this little horror streaming service I'm on, they do like exclusives, like the same way Netflix does, but it tends to be like weird little horror film festival finds that they've stumbled across, and obviously Netflix isn't going to pick them up, but Shudder is, and a lot of them are like not great, like they're okay, but they're not the kind of I'd rather just watch sort of like you know, more classic horror film stuff than these sort of more film festival horror finds. But Cold Hell was like really good. It was so it's an Austrian film about a Muslim girl who witnesses like a slasher serial killer killing someone, and then the serial killer starts to come after her, but she turned out to be like a full-on cage fighting beast of a Muslim woman, so she starts hunting him. Yeah, it's like, it is pretty good.
So she starts hunting him.
Yeah, it turns into like a bit of a, you know, you watch like Korean revenge films.
It sounds like what's it called? I Saw the Devil.
Yeah, so it's got a similar sort of vibe to that. But I was really impressed. I was surprised at how good it was actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. So recommended that. You've given it. I'm just checking. You've given it a solid four out of five stars.
Yes, 4 out of 5. I mean, it's not as, you know, high budget as a sort of Netflix original, but if you can look past the strings in the sellotape, then you're...
No. I'm thinking about thinking about possibly going to see Unsane this week.
The iPhone movie. Yeah.
So the iPhone movie made by Steven Soderbergh, is that right?
Soderbergh.
Yeah. Soderbergh, but you're like, the last few things, I mean, I saw Logan Lucky, really didn't like that.
I don't know anything about Soderbergh, I don't think. I can't think of any... Ocean's Eleven
and stuff. Aaron Brockovich. Stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Neither of those particularly vibe with that much. I've not seen it. I remember Louis C.K. I don't know how much we could talk about his jokes now, but he had this amazing bit in one of his shows when he said he'd never seen the end of Magic Mike because he's pretty sure it ended with him gay.
Well, I've never seen it either, so I couldn't possibly say. Yeah. I do know it's got Kevin Nash in it WCW and WWE fame.
I've heard loads of bad things about Kevin Nash. Like, there's loads of YouTube videos about how he screws people over and stuff. I don't know much about it, but
I'm not sure. I've seen some interviews with him. He seems like a bit of a douche, but like he knows he's a douche. So, well, yeah. He's also in The Punisher.
And gets his head. Thomas Jane one or.
Yeah, he's like a sort of weird sailor-y guy who gets beat up.
What?
Like a villain. Do you remember the horrible, brutal fight in Punisher's apartment? In Frank Castle's apartment?
Punisher Warzone?
Jane. He has a brutal fight with a guy, gets thrown through a wall.
Yeah. Is that Kevin Nash?
Yeah. It's Kevin Nash, yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that, actually. I remember, although the Warzone one, you know, never got particularly like well-reviewed, I loved it. It was like so brutal.
It was proper over the top, like skulls getting caved in, all of that.
It's a bit where I think he punched someone in the head, and the head sort of caved in, like the skull crushed it. And there was a guy doing a parkour somersault over a building, and he got shot with a bazooka.
I don't remember that, but that does sound great.
It was insane.
Parkour!
Yeah. Okay, so I've got some list of little topics or something that we could probably just jump into now. And then we've got some stats after that.
So we're going to do a nostalgic look back at all the films we've watched so far.
Yeah.
And how they've affected us as film fans, horror fans, beard owners.
Yeah.
Well, the beard owns me.
Yeah.
And just talk about, you know, because I think when you go into doing something like this, like you think you know horror and you think you know all these films and what your opinion's going to be of them. But so there have been some surprises, some like real struggles, and some films, I guess, that are revered as classics that maybe we weren't so hung up on.
Yeah. So
and okay. also, well, also a weird sort of order for the list and the appearance of some films where we're like, really? Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's one, The Ring 2, which has got to have been a mistake.
Yeah, we're pretty sure it's a mistake. But we will need to take it up with Empire to see if it was a mistake. Or it's just some rogue guy working there who's like, I'm going to really throw a spanner in the works here.
Yeah, I bet he puts cucumber in his custard. I don't know. Wow. It's like a little thing that shouldn't belong. And
it's because I'm kooky, man.
Yeah. Okay, so the first topic, favorite discovery. So film you'd never seen before. That you watched and you were like, "Ooh, that was surprisingly tasty."
Yeah, well, I was trying to remember which, because there have definitely been a few times in this podcast where you've said to me, "Have you seen this film before?" And I've said yes, like just because I wasn't quite sure. I think this might have been one of them. But I think my favorite discovery of the list so far is probably Audition, the one that had sort of the longest lasting effect on me.
That's one of mine as well. Like, because just it sticks with me so much, that, especially those final scenes.
Yeah. So when we watched it, I think I'm not sure my rating for it initially was a B.
Hmm.
But I think it is like super effective. I mean, I love sort of Asian cinema. Not so much horror though. Usually I kind of steer clear of like the sort of Asian horrors because I find them being a bit, especially like the ghosty stuff.
Yeah.
This one sort of like really, really stuck with me and a lot of the visuals. And I told a lot of people about it since when we're talking about what's a good freaky film. Because I mean, it's one of the first torture porn films, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's definitely my favorite discovery and something that I would like to go back and check out again.
We did an episode a while back about like horror moments that will stay with us. And it's always those, the ones that really stay with you, the ones that really get to you, like the ones that really freak you out or genuinely scare you. Mm-hmm. And this one is like, you know, we talk about like, people talk about Chasing the Dragon. Like you see so many horror films, they start to lose their sort of effectiveness on you a little bit.
Yeah.
Audition had the effect still. Like, it was just so shocking.
Yeah, had that sort of creepy, like, that cold feeling in your chest.
And the guy drinking the vomit and everything, and like, the guy in the bag. That. Yeah, it's insane.
That was delicious.
The tongue flapping on the floor like a fish.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was, you could see, I could see how it had, like, inspired a lot of modern films as well, especially like Western cinema with like the shock factor stuff. So yeah, that one's probably my favorite discovery, I think, so far.
But I've put down Let the Right One In, but like Audition in brackets, because I've seen Let Me In, which is the American remake, and I remember thinking that was pretty good. I was surprised by how good that was. And then I watched this one, I was like, Let the Right One In is, I don't know,
far superior.
Yeah, it's just a really, really solid like film. I think so I'm not a big vampire fan. I've never seen Near Dark. I've never seen a lot of these sort of, you know, The Lost Boys I've never bothered about. So vampires were never really sort of anything I'm that bothered about. But Let the Right One In, it's got that sort of a bit of a Guillermo del Toro sort of child fantasy sort of thing going to it, but it's a little bit more mature in the story it's telling. Yeah. And
it's like a fairy tale, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then it's got like, so the amazing moments like at the end where basically they drown him, like these bullies are gonna like, you know, do something to him, and then she comes in at the end to save him. It's a really good film.
Yeah, I mean I'd seen it a couple of times before, and I'm pretty sure I've seen Let Me In as well. But so, when I think of the story, I can't quite picture in it. Is it Chloe Moretz?
Yeah. So this, you know how the right one in is blue and white and it's got that kind of colour palette. Let Me In was yellow. Like, there's a lot of like old halogen street lamps.
I don't remember it massively well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good choice.
Okay. So, Aftertaste. So, a film that you loved at the time, but maybe left a bit of a. Actually, what is that?
Oh, the yuck. Do you know what? Like, there might have been a few from the main list, but the one that sticks out to me was like a bonus episode we did. Because at the time, I think it was only like maybe like a week after we'd seen it, or maybe even less than that. So my choice for the dirty, horrible, yucky aftertaste is Alien Covenant, which I gave a B+.
Did you?
When we watched it. I was pretty into it. But since then, like I've had next to no desire to like rewatch it.
Yeah.
But since then, like I've sort of been reading stuff, watching videos sort of like about it, and I just realized like it is just a really like kind of boring film. And I think like my love for the Alien franchise kind of like it kind of overpowered like my actual realization that it was a pretty crappy film with no real plot. And like it kind of just went over all the same old ground that all the Alien films had gone over. I think I just liked it because it was like, oh, it's a soundtrack. Oh, look, it's Michael Fassbender. Oh, no. And yeah, since then, I've just realized like, no, it's not that great. And I remember at the time being quite an advocate of the film and sort of saying, nah, it's fine. Like, it's getting all these bad reviews, but I mean, it's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But no, unfortunately, like in hindsight, the film was like falling apart like a old dry cracker.
Yeah. Weirdly, that's one that I, when I think back, I didn't really enjoy it amazingly. I think I gave it a C+ or something like that.
Yeah.
So it was good, but not amazing. But then I watched a YouTube video, and a guy was basically telling you why it's a good film, and he was shooting out these like points about how it's like it's a sort of a Dr. Frankenstein sort of story. With Michael Fassbender being the...
Yeah.
And he had all these points that really made sense. And was like, actually, I don't think it's a great film, but like, there's more to it than I initially was giving to it.
It just... I feel like this would... Because I like Prometheus as well. I like Prometheus.
I actually like Prometheus as well.
But I feel like where the film starts and where the film wants to go, it goes through so many different complicated steps to get there.
Yeah.
It feels like every step feels like it's just been jammed in there just for the sake of getting the film from A to B.
Is Alien Covenant or Prometheus?
Both, really.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be the origin of the Xenomorph.
Yeah.
And we just get like, well, this this thing happened, and then it crossbred with this, and then this freak occurrence happened, and then suddenly there's the alien.
Yeah.
And then this one is kind of a bit more of that. It's just like origins, man. Like, do we need so many origins? Like, I don't know if we do. Like you do, because you feel like really, you feel curious about where these things came from. But once you actually get the origin, you're like, well, it kind of ruins
the mystery of it.
It kind of ruins the mystery, and it kind of ruins
the idea of the space jockey in the first one.
Yeah,
and it's like, whoa, what? Like, there's the potential, the possibilities of what that is, and it's like,
and that,
yeah.
And now you watch back the first Alien, and you know what the space jockey is, and you're like, well,
so David killed everyone.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
The thing is, there's a bit at the end of Prometheus. Spoilers for Prometheus and Alien Covenant here. There's a bit at the end of Prometheus. Well, not at the end of Prometheus, but obviously carrying on from Prometheus into Alien Covenant, where you see the ship drop this like chemical weapon on the space jockey planet, which seems to just be like one Colosseum.
Yeah,
like, there's a whole other planet.
That annoyed me about it. That's one.
There's
of
a whole other planet, but there's no one else on that planet.
They're like super advanced planet as well, and
they're
living almost like just a tribal.
Just imagine a film where those two landed on that planet with those space jockeys. Like, it could have been so much more interesting. And just killing off Elizabeth Shaw. That was her name, wasn't it?
Like a really horrific way as well.
In a really horrific way, off screen, and not really, like, as an afterthought.
That's one of the reasons I don't like Alien 3, is because this is just the way they sort of kill
off
character.
Newt and, what's his name?
Bishop. No, the
Bishop. I can't believe I've forgotten. But yeah, they kill off like major characters off screen with like no fanfare, and it just feels like a disservice to that character. And it just, in hindsight, it's like, well, why make those choices?
Yeah.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So I still think Cat People is one of the best films on the list, but I went in with an A+, or was that an A-? It was way high. Properly blew my load. And that was like the fourth episode we did. I was like, I probably should have reined that in a bit. But I'm still maintaining that it's a good film. I would say, in the other way, an aftertaste, I'm like, that's getting better the more I think about it, is Day of the Dead. Because I'd never seen that before. And at the time, I was a little bit like, I don't know, there's something kind of cheesy about it and stuff. But now that sort of cartoonish, comic booky nature is like the thing I'm really enjoying when I think back about it. And I still think about the bit where the guy... when all of the zombies sort of get into the base with everything around, causing havoc, and the guy's screaming, and they're sort of ripping him apart, and his vocal cords tighten, and his scream gets higher pitched. I still think that's one of the most genius like kills I've ever seen. Genius. Yeah.
You know, there's an absolutely god-awful remake that's been released. Like,
yeah, I'm not going to watch it, I don't think.
Oh, no, definitely not. But it just seemed to just appear. Yeah. Like, it was like, oh, it's out now. And it's been absolutely slated, so probably absolutely no need to watch it at all. But yeah, the bit with the vocal cords was...
Bloodlines, right? Something like that, don't you?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And they've like recast like everybody, including the zombie. Yeah. Whatever.
Did you ever watch the Night of the Living Dead remake? So yeah. the Dawn of the Dead, you know, remake was the big hitter, and that did really well. I think I may have watched the Night of the Living Dead remake.
I saw the Night of the Dead remake before I saw the original.
Really?
It was like 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, early 90s or something, yeah.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, I do wonder if the version that I saw, because I think I was quite young, was the remake or the original? Because I would have been so young, they both would have made, you know, would have blended together. Was it like shot for shot remake? Pretty much, or
yeah, it was very, very similar. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know then. Okay, so best rewatch. So a film you've watched before, you know, even many times, but like for some reason coming to watch it again now, you're like, ah, that is good. That is very good.
Right, you go first.
Okay,
you go first because I misunderstood the question.
So, oh, well, what did you think the question was?
I thought it was like best rewatches in like you want to watch it again. So
okay. Well,
you give me your answer and I'll tell you mine.
Okay, cool. So, well, I got two. The one I mentioned earlier was Psycho. Watched a little bit of it on the laptop, and then I watched the rest of it on the big screen at home. I watched that film so long ago, but I kind of just sort of with Hitchcock, you kind of just think, I don't know, like it's an older film, like it's going to be a little bit of a boring watch, but it was just really well paced and really sort of strong. I'm surprised by how engrossing it was. But the one I really think I've enjoyed the most in the rewatch is American Werewolf in London.
Yeah, I think that's going to be my choice as well.
Yeah, that's such I don't know why I sort of don't hold that in higher regard than I actually do, because it's such a fun, insane film.
Yeah, yeah. So we gave that A's across the board. And you gave it an A minus when we watched that. Yeah, yeah. It's just one of those films like... I've probably seen it like half a dozen times, which probably don't seem like that many times, but each time it kind of like gives me something new, or like everything kind of feels like quite fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
And the sort of effect of that transformation scene, I mean, it still gets me, and there's still like super creepy, horrible stuff. And the humor running throughout it is great.
The music's solid as well. Bad Moon Rising, bit of CCR.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
so good. And also like the fact that like I know London a bit more now. I think, so this is the first time I watched it since I lived in London, and I'm like, now we were saying, talking about how the tube station was exactly the same. It was insane just seeing it. It's like traveling through time. But okay, so in terms of the other way you took the question, what was the film you were looking forward to? Did you have an answer for that?
Well, the other film that I sort of said best rewatch, I kind of thought, I misread it, so I thought it was a film you want to watch again.
Yeah.
And the reason I want to watch this again is simply because like it went mad at like award ceremonies, which was obviously Jordan Peele's Get Out.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And because I saw that like quite early on in its cinema run, like I didn't watch it with a keen eye for like what was, do you know what I mean? What was going to be, obviously it won Best Original Screenplay.
Yeah.
I went into it watching it as if it was another, just any other it's Blumhouse.
Yeah. Any other Blumhouse picture.
Other Blumhouse picture. I didn't watch it thinking it was like an award winner or something like that, or an Oscar nominated film. So I would like to watch it again just to take it in from that perspective as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, I don't think I saw any buzz about it before I watched it, and I remember watching it thinking that was a really solid. What did we rate it?
So you rated Get Out an A minus, and I went for a B plus.
Yeah. I'd like to watch it again, actually, yeah. Is it coming back on the cinema or something?
I don't know. I'm sure you could watch it anywhere, back of a van.
Okay. Biggest disappointment. So the film maybe you were looking forward to getting into, and you're like, this is the
best. It seems like I'm choosing all the films which we did as like special mentions, but the biggest disappointment for me was just based on all the hype surrounding it, and like the trailer and everything. It just looked like it was going to be
the artwork,
like a modern
the logo.
Day. The artwork, the logo. I thought it was going to be like a modern day take on The Thing.
Yeah.
And then I watched it and I was like, well, that was kind of naff. And that's The Void, which we reviewed quite early on in the life of the podcast, did we not?
Yeah, I think so. What did we?
Actually, maybe like. What do we rate that one?
Yeah.
So you gave it a C and I gave it a C-, but I might even go lower than that if I had to
rescore. Getting an idea of like, now we've seen so many of these things.
Yeah.
I think The Void is probably one of the lowest.
In my head, it just reminds me, this just feels like a sort of one of those sci-fi made-for-TV movies. Yeah. Not really bad because obviously a lot of the creature effects are really good, but it's just like story-wise, it's just like,
yeah,
there's not really anything going on at all, is there? I think because me and you hyped it up so much, we're like, have you seen this trailer? Oh my god, yeah, we gotta watch this. Oh god, yeah. And then when it came to watching it, it was like, eh.
Smelled so great, but the taste, you know, wasn't all there.
It smelled delicious, but it tasted like shit.
I preferred Jack Frost to The Void.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Jack Frost, I actually thought was a really surprisingly good film. Yeah. Not good. I wouldn't say it's good.
Do you know what? That might have been a film that I watched in like about four sittings.
Did you?
Simply because I think like I could never constitute sitting down and watching it. Like I was just like, I've got other things to do.
Yeah.
Like people walking in, what are you watching? Well, don't ask me, just watch.
I think it's funny that you're going with such low expectations and it's just like it knows that you can't hit low expectations, but it's so funny. What's the shark film that we did called again? Very recently?
Deep Blue Sea?
We're going to say Deep Rising, but I think that's something else I've seen. So Deep Blue Sea, I think that was way better than The Void as well.
Oh, yeah.
Miles better.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, Deep Blue Sea is great. I love Deep Blue Sea.
okay, so, oh yeah, you know what? I'm disappointed a little bit by the Universal films, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, I think I even gave them like a fairly generous grades as well. But the more I think about it, the more I think, oh, kind of like, they just aged. I don't know. But I really enjoyed Dr. Caligari. So the Universal film just didn't have the same sort of lasting effect for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They just, that was the thing. You could tell why they're great films, but not really stood the test of time. As I think we mentioned in previous episodes, it just depends.
Yeah.
When you grew up and when you saw the classic era of horror for yourself, and what constitutes like a great horror film. Like if you grew up being much younger and those were the first horror films you saw, those elements you would constitute a great horror film for you.
I do wonder. So people who love those films, they grew up in the, I don't know, grew up in the 60s or 70s and they love the 20s and 30s, the sort of that era. One of my favorite decades of horror, which we'll go into in a minute, is like the 70s, 80s, that sort of period. I do wonder if people growing up now are going to look back at the 90s, noughties and think they were the, you know, years that they really enjoyed.
Yeah, probably. Because that's just the way it works, isn't it? Like, you'd probably be more likely to watch like current horror films as you grow up, more so than the older ones.
Yeah.
It's only as you get older and become a film, like bit of a film fan, that you start looking back at the older stuff, realizing how much good stuff's out there.
Yeah. So the last one before we go into the stats then. So favourite decade of horror?
Well, I don't know if this like marries up to the stats, but I think my favourite decade of horror is the 80s, just because it's got some of my favourite horror films ever in it. So like American Werewolf, which was 81. Yeah. And then a film that's not on the list, The Fly, is one of my favorite horror films.
Yeah.
The Thing, The Shining. Alien is 1979, so kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the 80s for me again, because that was when I was growing up, that was the decade I was watching the most horror films from. So I think it was a good decade for horror because it was like it started to get real, real gory, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely between the 70s and 80s. Like
yeah.
that those two decades were you have all of the great ones in. But
I think the 70s are a bit more sort of like psychedelic.
See, that's why I think I maybe prefer the 70s. if I was looking at like as a patchwork quilt, I don't think all these the individual films themselves hold as big a sort of value as me. But when I think about how weird the sort of so like Wicker Man is insane. Yeah. The tone Don't Look Now is insane. Texas Chainsaw is a very specific weird.
Yeah. Suspiria. 77.
Those sort of films, I think. It's the same with like 70s music as well. Like 70s music, I've always enjoyed to sort of dig around in than the 80s stuff. But
I mean, the 70s was a lot more of a bit more of a mind fuck, whereas the 80s is like, look at all this blood, look at the pins in the face.
Yeah. Now you mentioned The Fly as well. I am thinking, oh, that Cronenberg stuff was, well.
We'll have to do an episode on The Fly because it's not on the list. So
yeah. Okay, so we're going to jump into the stats. Andy Conduit Turner, he's been on the show many times. He's also known as Mr. Spreadsheets, and he's been keeping like this Excel spreadsheet of all the films and the grades and that kind of thing. It's actually quite amazing how much how much work he's put into it. So he's put together a little rundown.
Hey guys, Andy here. Congratulations on 50 episodes. I'm here with some very interesting and exciting, as I'm sure everyone will agree, stats about the show so far. So, over 50 episodes, you've actually only rated 49 movies. You didn't rate a movie on the episode where you covered season 2 of Stranger Things, or the Christmas episode, or the episode where you guys talked about your top 10 horror moments that stick with you. That is balanced out by the fact on two occasions you've talked about more than one movie. The double bill you did of Ring 1 and 2, and the double bill of Frankenstein movies, which you did in one thing because pretty sure you expected them to be a bit old and shit. The 49 movies in question are of course 40 movies from Empire's top 50 list, and to date 9 guest appearances, which in no particular order were The Void, Alien Covenant, Get Out, Deep Blue Sea, 13 Ghosts, the new version of Stephen King's It, Gerald's Game, Annihilation, and The Ring 2, if we concur that Empire probably meant to put The Ring 1 on their list and not its much shitter sequel. On average, Luke scores ever so slightly more generously than Ben, averaging at a B versus Ben's B minus. The Horror Hangout guys tend to score quite close to the universal measure of film success that is IMDb's scale, awarding films on average a score of 7.5, which is 0.1 higher than the site's ubiquitous 7.4 rating. They are far less generous, however, than the critics over on Rotten Tomatoes, and they score an average of 11% lower than people on that site. Inclusive of films listed to watch in the top 50 but not yet rated on the podcast as yet, the podcast has slash will feature the largest number of films from the 2010s, 11 movies, closely followed by the 2000s and the 1970s with 10 movies each. Mr. Ben Errington's fabled cliffs of quality, which tumble headlong into the sea of disinterest, occur from 1930, with films dragging themselves back out to an acceptable level as of 1960. The exception, of course, being 1942, which triumphantly spikes out of this sea of disinterest thanks to the Luke Condor spire of cinematic perfection, a phenomenon created by the movie Cat People, which, despite being the only movie reviewed on the list from the 1940s, has an unprecedented score at the time of A- from Luke, making the 1940s, statistically speaking, the best decade of horror movies overall, scoring an average of 83%. Lagging ever so slightly behind the decade of cinematic perfection, which is the 1940s inspired by the success of Cat People, the 1970s follow with an average movie combined score from the two guys of 82%. Perhaps surprisingly though, Cat People isn't the film that almost broke up the band. Even Ben gave the film a B, making it a film he enjoyed statistically more than several others, including The Fog, The Others, and Don't Look Now. The most polarising film the guys have watched so far was Dracula 1958, which Luke graded B- while Ben rated a D. Of the 50 episodes so far, the guys have been joined by guests no less than 8 times, although 6 of those times were me. Moving on to best and worst, let's start with Luke's top 3. His highest rated film on the list so far was Let the Right One In, and he has a tie for second place between 28 Days Later and The Wicker Man. 10 movies are tied for the next place, including Cat People. Luke's joint worst movie were The Ring 2 and 13 Ghost. Just behind them also joint The Bride of Frankenstein and Deep Blue Sea. Ben's favourite movies to date have been Joint again, The Exorcist and 28 Days Later, followed by a list of five films tied for third place, including Kill List, Blair Witch, and the new Stephen King's It. Ben's worst films are those that languish in the sea of disinterest off the edges of the cliffs of quality, his worst movie ever being Dracula from 1931, and his almost worst movies just behind that tied Dracula 1958, The Devil Rides Out, and The Bride of Frankenstein. Combining the guys' individual scores together, we have currently a tie for first place between Let the Right One In and 28 Days Later, followed just behind by The Exorcist. And finally, the guys' combined worst rating so far is tied between The Ring 2 and 13 Ghost, just behind that, Dracula 1931, and The Bride of Frankenstein.
So, thank you very much to Mr. Spreadsheets.
Thanks, Andy. Lovely. Yeah. Mr. Spreadsheets.
So, your top three. What are your top three films?
So, my top three. So, number one and number two are joint top, because I think I gave them both A+, of an extremely generous A+. So it's The Exorcist and 28 Days Later. That's my top two. Number three, I've got five films tied, apparently, which I think like is just must be an A. Andy hasn't written down what five they are, but I could have a quick look. But it includes Kill List, The Blair Witch Project, and the new It, which I gave an A.
Yeah, would you still hold that A?
Maybe an A- in hindsight.
That's what we have to taste. I'm now thinking it was okay.
Yeah, I think like there was a lot of hype surrounding that film at the time.
Yeah,
I get swept up in it.
Yeah, it's difficult to sometimes.
Yeah, I get so swept up in it. So my worst movie was 1931 Dracula, and almost worst tied Dracula 1958, The Devil's Rides.
You hate Dracula
and Bride of Frankenstein. Clearly, there was a theme there.
Yeah.
So then, what's your top three?
Number one has been Let the Right One In, and then number two and three were tied 28 Days Later and The Wicker Man. 28 Days Later is good. I forgot about Kill List. That's like great. I really enjoyed watching that again. Our combined best has been Let the Right One In, 28 Days Later at number one, tied, and at number three, The Exorcist. That's interesting. I'm not, when I think about the best films I've watched, The Exorcist isn't coming to mind right away.
Yeah, we were pretty high on that. I did give an A+, though, so probably took everything.
The worst movie we rated was The Ring 2 and 13 Ghosts tied. Almost worst, Dracula 1931 and Bride of Frankenstein. Oh, well.
Again, probably me bringing it down there. Yeah, that's weird, 13 Ghosts. That was one where we were like, yeah, let's watch 13 Ghosts. Oh, yeah, that's great, that film, isn't it? And then we watched it, we were like, yeah, it's pretty awful.
Yeah, it's not aged that well. But I still want to watch, what was the other one that came out around that time from the same company?
House on Haunted Hill, yeah. The remake of that, yeah.
Because I remember really liking that as a kid. Mm. So yeah, I'd like to watch that again.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that's us done for today.
Yeah, very nice.
Been interesting to look back, but now we must look forward to the final 10.
To the final 10. Maybe we could put like a screenshot of this this spreadsheet somewhere for people to look at.
Yeah.
Or like a version of the spreadsheet. But because it's quite extensive what's there. There's a lot of averages for per decade. it's great stuff. It's phenomenal work.
Yeah. Maybe once we've done the entire 50, we'll do a similar thing again, just to sort of see if anything's changed. Because these top 10, they've got to be good. Like, they've got to, you know, mess
They better be good.
Next week, we'll be watching Jaws, I believe.
Yeah.
And
Sharky.
Sharky. Anything else to say?
That's it, mate.
Cool. This show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. Become a patron over at patreon.com/HawkandCleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners who enjoyed the show. Give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes and remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a real horror dude.
Thank you very much, Luke.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.